wished I knew more science. The open end of the cylinder of foil would be full of muscle and bone. How well would radio waves travel in and out through that? Car radios work inside a box that's mostly metal, but I vaguely remembered something a teacher said in school about how they got around that. I was probably studying the back of Rosie Bender's neck and trying to imagine the rest of her skin, and somehow didn't quite get what he was saying about radio waves. Looked around and didn't see any witnesses, and the car's windows were tinted anyhow. I tore off a long sheet of foil and wrapped it around my left hand and arm, molding it up past the elbow. Having a right angle in a tunnel of foil might help. There wouldn't be a straight line from the bug to the outside world. Good thing I'd gotten a wide roll. It overlapped with plenty of room to spare. I wound masking tape around the whole thing generously, then managed to hide most of it inside the sling. I would still be able to fire the rifle or the revolver, but probably couldn't reload either of them without tearing the foil off the left hand. Well, if it came down to shooting, I wouldn't be worried about radio waves. I'd worked out a vague plan. Might as well get going. A county road paralleled the interstate for 24 miles, so I'd follow that. I put the cell on the passenger seat in case I had to do dangerous stuff like driving while talking on the phone or shooting at people. Started the car and moved out. The road was almost deserted. After a few miles, the cell buzzed and I picked it up. What? I resisted the urge to laugh into the awkward pause.
Your car is moving, the woman said.
It's your car, I think, and it's headed for Washington, I said. Isn't that what you wanted?
Why aren't you on the highway?
I have 3 days. It's an unfamiliar car, so I'd rather not speed. Why, is that a problem?
Take your next right. Get back on the highway.
Okay. She didn't say, we seem to have lost your hand. Maybe time to confuse things more. Steering with my elbows, I unwrapped the foil from my hand. Then as I drove along, I covered it up for a few seconds at a time. Then I left it uncovered. Let them think that the battery inside my hand was failing. My half-formed plan was to set them up so they wouldn't panic if the signal from my hand flickered on and off. Over the next 3 days, I wouldn't cover it up for more than a minute. But if I ever did want to drop off their radar screen, I could do it. And the first thing they'd think was battery failure. Of course, they could track me anyhow as long as I stayed in this car. That was okay for the time being. Since I didn't know where Kit was, my only hope was that their directions would lead me to where she was being held. I did take the next right and obediently got back on I-85. The screen button said I was 980 miles from Washington. What could I do in 980 miles? Sleep a couple of times. I picked up the phone and thumbed it. This car doesn't have super cruise. How long do you think I can drive before I fall asleep at the wheel?
We will tell you when to stop. The woman again.
What if I have to pee?
Go ahead, she said, a trace of amusement in her voice. It's not your car.
I drove along 8 or 10 miles until the next exit sign, picked up the phone. Seriously, I need some coffee if I'm going to stay on the road. There's a place in 2 miles.
All right, she said. Use the facilities. Treat yourself to a candy bar.
I would, actually. Get the blood sugar fired up. I pulled into the rest stop and parked. I watched for a few minutes, and no black SUV followed me in. Well, if they could assassinate a president or someone important, they could probably afford a second car. On impulse, I opened the back door and took the rifle out of its box. I propped it up diagonally across the passenger's seat, then left the car unlocked and went to get my coffee. I took my time in the bathroom and then got a coffee and a pastry. I stood and enjoyed the block of crumb cake with apricot filling, watching the car from the rest stop foyer in air-conditioned comfort. Just as I finished the crumb cake,
A fish took my bait. A stern-looking state trooper watched me saunter out with my half-finished coffee.
"Is this your car, sir?"
"Yes, it is."
"You left it unlocked with a weapon in the front seat."
"Really?" I took out the keychain and pushed the button twice. The car honked. "Good grief! Careless of me!"
"Well, be more careful, sir."
He walked away without asking for my license and registration. What kind of a police state is this? How do you know I'm not headed to Washington to shoot the goddamned president? I hoped he had at least written down the license plate number or taken a picture. Maybe he had one of those micro cameras in his hat. But I put the ignition key in and turned, and nothing happened. Took it out and tried again. Then a big dark shape pulled up behind me and stopped. A state police tow truck. The cop came back with a friend, a very stern-looking woman with a Smokey the Bear hat and her left hand on the butt of an automatic pistol that rode too high on her hip. The other hand hovered over a spray can on the right. Her voice was a staccato chirp. "Sir, we have to ask you to come out of the car and keep your hands visible, please."
"Sure."
I opened the door slowly and eased my tired bones out. "What else can I help you with?"
"Are there any other weapons in the car?" he asked.
"No. Yes. I mean, not in the car. In a suitcase in the trunk, there's a gun." "Would you please open the suitcase and show us? We won't confiscate it without reason."
Even with reason, I wondered whether they were on shaky legal grounds.
Could they make you open a suitcase without a warrant? The rent-a-cops at airport security did it routinely, so maybe they were covered. I opened up the suitcase and stepped away before she could order me to. "Take a look." The snub-nosed revolver was inside on top of the clothes. She searched through them anyhow and didn't find anything else interesting. Have I broken a law here? My half-formed plan was to get the police suspicious enough to follow me, hopefully without throwing me in the slammer. The male officer took off his sunglasses, revealing soft features in a big, round face.
"There is a law against creating an attractive nuisance, sir. A nice rifle begging to be stolen qualifies, I think."
So I could be arrested for somebody else's theoretical lack of moral fiber. "You're not being arrested, sir," the woman said, "though I will issue a warning to you." She reached for a notebook very slowly, I guess so as not to spook me in case I had yet another gun squirreled away. She asked the other officer what the code was for attractive nuisance, and he didn't know either, so they settled on 999. They gave me the warning and abjured me to have a good day, and please put the weapons where they weren't in plain sight. The warning wasn't a citation. It was somebody's brilliant PR idea, a smiley face with "friendly warning" printed across the top. No name or license number involved. How friendly. I probably wasn't in any state police computer for it. The tow truck door slammed, and then there was a solenoid click down by my starter switch. So they could turn off this car's engine by remote control, which I'd known was true in a couple of states. Another reason to stick with bicycles. I did put the rifle in the trunk, but also, perhaps unwisely, took the .38 from the suitcase and slipped it into the front door pocket, tucking a map over it for camouflage. Not that I was going to quick-draw it from the driver's seat with my left arm incapacitated. It was right next to the plastic wallet with Grant Harrison's identification. Maybe I should have used it. "Remember this name, officers. It will be in the papers soon." My fingers tingled, and so did my toes, a not completely unpleasant feeling I remembered from combat. Like feeling a change in the weather. A shitstorm may be gathering, but at least it won't take me by surprise. I studied the parking lot, feeling a little sheepish, and didn't spot any tanks or snipers. I touched the estimated time button on the map, and numbers appeared under route lines. I was 5 hours from Huntsville. Figure on stopping there for dinner and a rest. As I pulled out of the parking lot, I told the phone to recharge itself from the car's system while I drove. It had one message, which had come in while I was being interrogated by the Smokies. We will call you with instructions this evening at 8 o'clock your time. You have to be checked into a motel or hotel by then. You might want to get some rest.
That was thoughtful of them.
It would put me on the other side of Huntsville, but 8 o'clock was late to be looking for a room. I'd start looking well south of the city. The phone buzzed, and I picked it up wearily.
So soon?
Yeah? Hey, babe, what's up?
The voice was only vaguely familiar.
I don't know. What is up?
Who are you?
Break my heart, babe. This is Ron. Ron Duquest, the only guy between you and $1 million.
Jesus! How on earth did you get this number? I just got this phone.
What do you mean? He said. You emailed me the number this morning from Miss a fucking Sippy? What the hell are you doing down south?
What should I or could I tell him? Of course we were being overheard, at least my side of the conversation. I chose my words carefully.
Unlikely as it sounds, I said, I'm doing a little thing for the army.
Secret.
The army? I thought you hated them.
What can I say, Ron? Their money spends.
That's great, babe, but what about me? And my money? The army takes precedence over my monster?
Jesus. Didn't I just send you a chapter?
Jack, yeah, you sent me a chapter, like a week ago.
Couple of days, I said.
The monster's got the biking guy, he said. He's about to fucking eat him, and the cops are closing in while he sharpens the fucking knife, and you have to do a job for the fucking army? One of us is crazy, man, and I'm sure as hell it's not fucking me.
I had to smile in spite of everything.
It's me, Ron. I am totally fucking bugged fuck.
I checked my watch.
Look, I'm about to knock off driving for the night. I'll stop at a place with Wi-Fi and do you a couple of pages. You got to, man. I gotta know. Does he eat the guy? No, don't tell me. I want to agonize.
Okay, Ron. I'll do as much as I can.
Do more! I want to know what happens to this fucking freak.
Do what I can, I repeated. Talk to you tomorrow. I clicked it off and tossed it on the seat. A big sigh surprised me, and then I had to laugh.
If you only knew, Ronald, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy, using the term loosely.
Chapter 13. Hunter removed the tape from his victim's mouth slowly but gently. This one was also athletic, but not as skinny as the girl last month.
Good.
Hunter had duct-taped his wrists and ankles. He pushed the bandana that had been covering his eyes up onto his forehead.
If you make any noise, I will bind and gag you again, but I will hurt you first.
Okay, he said hoarsely. I understand.
I do want you to understand, Hunter said. I want you to know what's happening to you is special.
Thank you.
His eyes tracked all around the trailer. A library of science fiction and popular science paperbacks in floor-to-ceiling bookcases. Large old medical books, anatomy and physiology. A too large billiard table took up half the floor space. Hunter crouched and lifted the table's false top of green felt, not straining. Underneath, a metal surface with blood gutters. Its white enamel had been scrubbed, but stains persisted.